Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome back to my podcast, or should I say the Star Freud Wellness Podcast. And I am your host, Star Freudenberg. And for all of those people out there that are joining in on this podcast for the first time, welcome, welcome, welcome to my world. This podcast is focused on health and wellness of all sorts, of all types, in all industries, working with the body, the mind, the soul. And I just want to give you tidbits of information every week just to help really hone in on things and areas in your life that you might want to work on or didn't know about or didn't even know you had an issue with. So that's the point of the podcast. For today's podcast, this has been a long-awaited, promised podcast, and this is to do within the gut health sector of parasites. Dum dum dum. You know, why I have this title, I don't know if I'm proud of it or not, but I am classed as the parasite queen. And that's just simply based on the fact that I, you know, in terms of all the things I do and offer, my most predominant service is colonic hydrotherapy, powerful gut health tool that can really, really reset your body, your digestion. And, you know, we're talking on the themes of, you know, people are starting to come to this awareness and understanding that, you know, our mind is not the only thing that is basically dictating things in the body. And there's theories out there going on with now the gut's the second brain. But I'm here to tell you, based on working with so many people, different constitutions, different types, different ways of lifestyle, upbringing, different countries, blah, 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 I can say firsthand that your gut is the boss. And, you know, argue that the gut is the primary brain that controls everything, because when digestion is off sync, people are just not able to function. And that is the reason why this is the foundation of all my work, and almost as a prerequisite, unless you are contraindicated, that I encourage and if not beg and convince and persuade people to perform or receive colonic hydrotherapy. It's the only therapy that I have witnessed or discovered to date that's natural and really can produce amazing results instantly. You know, bloating can go down, mind can clear, weight can be lost, skin will improve, skin conditions, rashes, psoriasis, eczema, cellulite, hair loss improvement, pain in the body can go away, body can finally detox, because it's working on three things. And I always say it, number one is hydration. Second is liver detox. And, you know, what does that mean, liver detox? Liver is the organ in that body that holds all of our poisons, our toxins. So it's really the hardworking guy that's trying to keep us okay and sane and not falling sick every 5 minutes. And it's getting rid of excess fecal matter. And why is that important? Because when I trained, we were told that we can keep or store up to 10 kilograms of excess waste in our body that can be trapped predominantly in the colon / large intestine. And this is, again, with years of experience, just seeing how deep-rooted and sedimented toxins can be in the body. And when we go through a huge detox protocol, just to see what comes out. And, you know, unfortunately, one of those things will be parasites, you know. A lot of people, when they come for colonics, they are always like, oh my gosh, tell me, is there a parasite? Do I have parasites? And sometimes, which I find really, you know, comical in a sense, but in a sense strange as well, is people get disappointed when I don't say that they have parasites. And, you know, just sort of as on a side note, it's really much better to not have them, because parasites can be quite a struggle. You know, it's some different organism now occupying you as a host and fundamentally starting to control you. And depending on the severity of parasite you have or species, you know, things can really, really go haywire. You can, you know, drop half your body weight. You can become chronically ill, bedridden, no energy, sick all the time, vomiting, diarrhea, consuming foods, but, you know, you're not getting energy of it. And sometimes can result in, you know, in fatality. So you can end up dying. Because they eventually take over the host, and, you know, some stories where they can basically start eating your internal organs and they just basically take over. But what I can say on an energetic aspect is they really do control the mind. And I mean, if you can think of any movies where like there's hypnotists or the evil guys seem to take over the good guys and controlling them. It's like a brainwash, and I really do emphasize that, because when people start going through a detox cleanse, or as I call it, a parasite protocol, the first things I warn about is you need to warn your family when you're going through this, because you're going to start to behave very strange and very like introverted and shutting yourself off and not communicative. You can start lashing out and being highly reactive and angry. And I've seen it time and time again, you know, some people's relationships end up, you know, where they start breaking, they end up breaking up, or, you know, people lose their jobs because they're starting to have irrational behavior. So it's really, really something not to be taken lightly. And then what's very interesting as well, there's a document explaining that, you know, during the full moon, which will happen once a month, you can also be a lot more agitated and aggravated because parasites are triggered around that time. So I always say to people, if we can, you know, doing or starting a parasite protocol is good around the time of a full moon, but realistically, any time's a good time, right? I've had many, many stories, and I truly, this is the only reason I've come up with, but because of the nature of me being an energy worker and a healer, and I'm working at extensive depths and working with multiple systems from around the world, like shamanic medicine, Tibetan medicine, Chinese medicine, Taoist practices. I've got some practices from Africa as well. I don't know if I want to call it like my frequency somewhat different. So when I physically touch people, parasites just seem to let go, or maybe I shock them to death. I don't know. But people come from different colonic practitioners and saying, you know, I'm really unwell and I don't seem to understand what's going on, but you do full spectrum of testing. Can you help? And I say, oh, it's quite simple. You have parasites when we go into the colonic. And they seem confused because they said, well, I've been at different practitioners and this has never happened before, or they've never mentioned it before. And, you know, this can be the case because sometimes, you know, there's a different energy that the practitioner has. Sometimes it could be that you might have done something over the, maybe from between sessions, that you might have eaten something differently. That might have been parasitic or killing parasites in a sense, because there's certain foods that can support that. You know, different reasons, different mind space, different parts of your journey. So, you know, that's sort of where we're going with that. But yeah, when once you start removing parasites, you need to appreciate it's not a one-off job. It's a protocol, can take sometimes 3 to 6 months, but discipline is needed. In summary, parasites feed off sugar, and that's what you're going to crave a lot. And the idea is you need to start fighting these deep-rooted desires and impulsive feelings that you'll have, and almost sort of, in a sense, fighting off an addiction, because something internally is motivating you, trying to make different decisions that you would not usually make until you know, really getting into the procedure of the die-off, and then it's starting to really work psychologically and tests you a lot. And then after that, we need to really reboost and regain the immune system to really strengthen it and prevent this from happening, because it can do. And, you know, it's not exactly the cheapest of protocols to follow, but, you know, if you want to ensure that this wouldn't recycle, because I've had many people who've done the protocol, didn't sort of stick to it, sort of, let's say, half-assed about it, and still full of parasites. And, you know, parasite is not someone that lives in isolation. They're communities that live with inside you, festering on different organs or inhabiting in different places. So it's just being really, really mindful that you need to do it properly. And I'm not going to be the person that's going to keep pushing you and saying, you have to do this. This is so serious. I'll just say, you know, if you're not doing this to the fullest and maximum capacity, be mindful there are consequences to your actions, right? What I can say for sure is that it's like a dual process. So when we work doing parasite, so at the clinic, I have a protocol. I recommend supplements, nutrition. We do blood tests to eliminate certain foods. Obviously, there is definite restrictive foods that everyone needs to follow when they're on a parasite protocol. And one is the protocols helping ensure a die-off. So you're literally killing the parasites within you. Then we need to support it with colonic hydrotherapy to flush them out. And you need to continue doing weekly colonics, because the female parasite will lay eggs around the bum. And that's typically why people experience anal itching or red rashes around their bum area. And they're not sure why that's happening. It's because it's literally life being activated down there. So that can explain a lot of things. So we want to ensure one of two things: we're killing, flushing out, and also ensuring that any eggs or any newbies that are being born cannot, you know, sustain having life. We basically want to just eliminate, and take extra precaution to eliminate. So yeah. So there's a lot of questions I get all the time about this. And I do feel like I repeat myself a lot, because parasites are something that I deal with significantly and predominantly with my time when I think about my gut health area within the work that I do. And what I've done is I made a big document, but I thought what would be good is just to run through it over voice, so people can also take it from an audio perspective, because it can be tricky to read because everyone's differently inclined, right? So even though I've said so much already, but I mean, what I can say for sure, like the reactions that I've seen with people over the years, it's been very, very fascinating to see the straight emotional response. For me, it's like, okay, you've got parasites, nothing to be stressed about, you know, and now we have strategies. And, you know, in a sense, sometimes I say it's quite good validation for people, because they finally get the why they've been sick for so long, why they've been like this for extended period of time. Interesting why the doctors have never found anything. It's because they're not looking at it on a different level. And some people go like, oh, okay, cool, I've got parasites, so what do I do about it? But some people become extremely alarmed and very distressed, as if like a big monster is about to engulf them. So it's being really, I'm saying, oh my God, but it is really being quite emotionally responsible with how you can manage the emotions of the people. Yeah, because when you first start as a practitioner, you don't really think twice about how someone's going to react, because you just think based on your response how you would react. But anything can happen behind the doors within the clinic, so you need to obviously be somewhat capable of managing people and emotions, and, you know, helping calm someone when they're distressed, because finding out if or when you have a parasite can be distressing, you know, because parasites can lead to a variety of health problems. And just sort of harping on again, you know, common signs that you may have parasites, it's usually gastrointestinal issues like bloating, gas, constipation, diarrhea, nausea, stomach pain, like I said, anal itching, etc. But when we do the consultation before anyone comes for session, I really am trying to just sort of rule out these potential markers so I can keep an eye out for parasites. You know, when I once in the beginning of my career was affiliated with a company that performs a parasite analysis from stool samples, you know, they can, or so at that time, they stipulated that they can analyze over 500 different species of parasite. And I can say to date, I've definitely seen a different amount of creatures, you know, but the most traditional one I'll probably say is that I've seen hookworm, and a couple of, I don't know the best way to describe it, but round ones and tapeworms as well. Those are the most common I've seen. And also with the variation in the shape, the size, and the color. And, you know, this is a story I love sharing because I had my one client pass a worm so long. I was so excited that I actually, because when you release your fecal matter and waste, it goes straight into the sewage system through a U-bend. But I actually stopped the colonic and I fished it out because I was like, this is way too good to like throw away. And I was incentivized to send it to this stool lab to, you know, tell me what it was and what they can say from it, or maybe do some scientific research. I don't know. I was just too excited because it's nothing like what we get taught or were taught when I trained, and obviously haven't had this level of worm for years. Then I messaged the lab and I was like, yeah, you know, I've got this worm. Here's a picture. Like, how can we, you know, get this done and have it analyzed? And the woman came back to me and basically said I was disgusting for like, you know, manually handling this parasite. And I was like, you dig through poo for a living to find the parasites, but you're thinking I'm gross because I've got the actual solid thing without the fecal matter. But anyway, on that note, yeah, I've seen some really, really, really extremely big ones. So yeah, it can be overwhelming or very insightful or intriguing, but you know, as me, the mad scientist kind of personality, I'm just like, wow, like what is possible to come out of you? There's, yeah, one extreme case I can definitely say with, a patient. And I think as a result of that, she had, you know, was starting to get on edge, developing mental health issues because for years, basically being triggered by doctors saying she's unwell, you know, lost a lot of weight, unsure of what's going on, to basically just keep getting no answers and people saying on paper, you're fine. And if it was me, definitely can say for sure this constant backlash from, you know, not getting help or support would make me mad. Like quite literally that you start to question yourself as well. But yeah, I mean, quite frightening. She said that she knows she has worms and she said she could feel them under the skin and they're laying eggs. And when I did feel her skin, you know, just like on her forearm, it was very bumpy. And then when I would basically push one, you could feel it popping. And it was raising a lot of red rashes around it. So you could see there was a lot of irritation. And she shared a story that she said, and you could see by the way she was explaining it, it was literally terrifying for her, that she was sitting one day and then she just felt in her perineum, which is the patch between your anus and maybe in case vagina or testicles, that she felt a huge vibration there, and then she basically implying there was a parasite moving, and she said that she felt it crawl all the way up her body, and she said she could feel it in her brain, which is terrifying, isn't it? So yeah, and then of course even going back to the doctors, they're just like, you need to go to a mental health hospital. And she's like, why are you not helping me? And you know, that sort of led her onto a journey of when she started exploring alternative health treatments, you know. But in a sense, I don't see her often, and this is a different case as well, because sometimes, you can be so unwell that you basically have no energy, that when you go for healing, you can't even really heal because you have no energy to heal. So it can be a bit more negative actually to receive treatment. And so she's constantly balancing this fine act of like trying to get better, sort of manage her life, and then can sort of come for treatments as and when she can. But what's interesting on that story is because recently, you may or may not have heard, but there was a woman who was severely unwell, and they basically did an MRI scan and found this abnormality in her brain. So then the neurosurgeons went and did some surgery on her and lifted some brain tissue and found a live worm in her head. And I mean, that's concerning. And apparently to date now, this is the first documented worm that's been identified in the head. But I can just say from my own experience, it's the first documented time, but it's not the first real time. And of course, I feel sorry for a lot of people who've been, you know, sort of ignored or not appropriately treated because of this, you know. So yes, if you want to know the article, just, you know, drop a comment and I'll definitely send it over. But yeah, if I go back to my lovely document, which is very structured, otherwise I waffle. You know, parasites are like, despite having mentioned they can be gastrointestinal effects, right? Of course, you have common gut health issues as a result. But, you know, in some cases, parasites can lead to things that are more severe. And I'm thinking like seizures, infertility, blindness, even heart failure if it's left unchecked as well. And people don't even realize that parasites actually could be the driving force behind all of the health issues that they're experiencing. It's just more put down to, oh, maybe it's in the family, or what have I done wrong? Must be bad diets, or, you know, you're just an anomaly, you know, how can you have this? Some people, you know, so you shouldn't be like this at your age, So just, you know, if you potentially are one of these people and you think, maybe this could be why, then you should be booking in an appointment today and I can help you out. A next very, very big question that I always get asked is, well, how common are parasites? And the reality is parasites are very common. if we're really boiling down to the technical aspect of it, we are a parasite ourselves. So we all have them. But of course, when we get the quite serious ones that are, let's call it intending, with the intention to make us unwell, this is when they can lead to having or causing a variety of different health issues and complications if left to just run wild in your body, right? So again, if you have a few symptoms, it's best to start going, maybe I need to get this checked out. Because again, I'm working in preventative medicine rather than you're sick, you're ill, if something you can't reverse now, right? So we go with the next question, right? What is a parasite? Right. So I wrote this, which I think is quite funny. So you can think of a parasite as that one friend that comes to visit you from out of town and just doesn't know when to leave. So they'll lay around on your couch all day, eat your food, overstay their welcome. And that's literally exactly what a parasite is. So, but if you want to speak scientifically, a parasite is an organism that lives and feeds off a host organism. So parasites are not bacteria and viruses, because this is very commonly misunderstood, but they are single-celled organisms, protozoa, and or multi-celled organisms, so it can be like worms. So parasites will fall into three primary types, so protozoa, helminths, or like worms, and ectoparasites. So within these three groups, you'll find specific parasites you may have heard of, like I've mentioned already, tapeworms, or something else you'll know is lice or bed bugs, mosquitoes or scabies, that kind of thing. So the first question everyone asks as well is like, so I've got parasites, where did I get them from? And the answer is, I can't say for sure, but these are some of the most common ways that one may acquire a parasite infection. So usually contaminated food or water. So when I think like certain countries you travel to, so my mind when I first went to Egypt, it's like, okay, don't drink water that is not bottled, you know, super cautious. Everyone is on a way, they're like, oh, I didn't drink the tap water, you know, I'm okay. But yes, when you're sitting in a bath or a shower, putting your face towards the shower, opening your eyes, maybe your nostrils, maybe a little bit of your mouth. Also, if you're brushing your teeth with that water, you know, you can potentially get exposure. One of my clients, who's a big avid traveler, she picked up a parasite in Spain from drinking the Spanish water. So, you know, it literally can be anywhere. And when I think of food, I'm thinking like, you know, raw meats or unwashed vegetables. Or if you think in like another comment, when I was in Thailand, you know, a lot of the street markets, they'll have people selling foods on the road, on the street. And, you know, how long is that meat or, you know, meat or protein has been sitting out in the sun, rotting effectively, flies going over it. And then they're like, oh, can I have this? And then they'll just throw it on the grill and cook it. But that food is well contaminated. And I had that experience when I was in Thailand. I was like, I ordered a chicken on a stick, like sort of like a kebab style. And when I smelt it, I was like, this is just not worth the risk, you know? And the same, I remember seeing when we went for breakfast, they'd have an array of fruit platters. And just the amount of flies and like bugs that were crawling all over it, it just was so wrong. And it was in a good like rated establishment as well. So it was a bit concerning. And just remember, flies are carriers, you know, they're the ones on sitting on the junk or in trash and all of that. And they just then fly over to your food and then they'll just bring that contamination with as well. So it's just trying to really be quite literally anal and on top of, you know, being mindful of what you're eating, where you're getting things from, because it's just not worth it. And again, it could be just at home, straightforward, where you don't kick your meat all the way through and you eat raw food. And, you know, it's quite funny. I actually had a situation with my partner this year where he made, it was chicken schnitzel. And we were having it in a wrap and we were so glued to watching a movie. I don't know, I forgot what it was, but it was just so intensive. And I remember biting down into these chicken wraps and unconsciously grabbing more sauce because I thought, this is really not tasting right. And unconsciously, I didn't register. It was very chewy at the same time. And then I kept putting up sauce. And then eventually when I bit the wrap, the piece of chicken popped out. And then I looked down and I saw it was like virtually raw. Because basically what happened is we messed the timing up on when we put the chicken in the oven. And then I was a bit paranoid going like, oh my God, I'm going to get parasites. What do I do? I can't afford to get food poisoning or be sick. So it was a bit of a tricky one. So I tried to do a couple of protocols to act as a purgative from my herb. From my herbal knowledge. But unfortunately, it wasn't successful. And I thought, oh, well, I'm going to be, full of parasites in the next few weeks. But I obviously then had appropriate protocol in order to take and ensure that I was okay. But the next day was pretty much okay. Just a bit of diarrhea. But I think that's better, the better of the evils. But yeah, so you could be a victim as well of these things. So you need to just make sure you really watch the time that you put your food on. Make sure when you cooked or having cooked meat, you know, you cut through, steak or the chicken, especially because chicken can have salmonella. And you just make sure things are cooked through properly so you can just mitigate the risk. Another common one, because most people don't, I don't know actually, but I say this more generically, most people don't know that it is advised to wash your fruits and vegetables, even if it's organic or not. And very few packets, but there are some packets that say, you know, pre-washed and that it's okay, you can eat it straight away. I also don't recommend that. I still recommend washing because you don't know what kind of water they've used, and water is a contaminant and very powerful with people. I pick up a lot of E. coli that they pick up, that they've picked up just from contaminated water essentially. So yeah. So another common way of getting parasites is if you're not cleaning off your fruits and vegetables before eating them. Then there's other things. I mean, I would say this is less common, but I always say, you know, if you're walking around without your shoes and socks on and that your feet end up having direct contact with the floor or contaminated water sources like rivers and lakes when you go on holiday, just being mindful just to be as protected as you can wherever you are, right? Also, like, are parasites contagious or transferable? That kind of question. And I say yes to people that you should be aware that parasites are easily transmissible. So someone with a parasite who doesn't wash their hands after using the bathroom can transfer tiny parasite particles to anyone else that they may come in contact with, like, for example, touching doors when you're entering or leaving, or picking up items in a grocery store, or, you know, maybe you pick up something, you put it back down. you know, but just check with the CDC, and they can also give you some guidance to see what parasites, you know, are sort of local to your area. Or even maybe check it before when you travel or after you've traveled. Just don't know. You probably now will because of this podcast. But yeah, it is impossible for someone to prevent further parasitic infections after cleansing. Natural practitioners like myself recommend that you avoid eating raw food or undercooked food, meat, seafood, when you travel internationally. I say things like, avoid water that isn't purified or bottled. Avoid ice, because that again is water, just in a different form. Fruits that you can't peel. Swimming or bathing in fresh water. Foods that are prepared by vendors on the street, which I've just explained. So, and then transmitting a parasite to you if they're infected with one already. So you can always... you can always be susceptible to catching a parasite from someone else. So if your partner, sibling, family member has one, you need to sort of isolate them a bit, just like your protocols like COVID, right? So at least you have some practice. So next thing I talk about is symptoms of parasites. So as they are common, you know, there is a lot of information out there on how to tell if you have parasites and also how to get rid of them. So the things or the signs you want to look out for, like I've said, there's bloating, gas, constipation, diarrhea, skin issues like rashes or itchiness, but not to be confused with psoriasis or eczema, but of course going to a specialist, a GP or a dermatologist or an alternative practitioner who specializes in skin, you know, can sort of help you distinguish, or maybe this is parasitic infection, or it could be just general psoriasis or eczema skin condition, which is autoimmune related. Sometimes can be a result of both, but not as common. Yeah. Other symptoms, feeling fatigued, depressed, unexplained weight loss, you know, and I always joke with the woman, like, they're like, oh, I wish I had a parasite, I'll lose half my weight, and I'm like, promise me you do not mean that. Like, don't manifest that. You literally don't mean that. But yeah, so different ways about it. But if you want to know if you have a parasite, for sure. You know, colonic is not the primary way I would say that, because of, again, from years of experience, I've worked with people for, you know, unexplained illness, and then they do protocol, and then parasites can only start coming out even after 6 weeks, 8 weeks, few months, 3 months, 6 months. But the most common way is to do a comprehensive stool test or a blood test, or get an endoscopy or a colonoscopy done. Or, you know, if you're a bit more open to the alternative work, we can do kinesiology, where we can use quantum vials that have been energized with parasites frequency, and then we can put it onto your body, into your energy circuit, and then we can sort of assess whether or not you have, is your body strong to resist this frequency, or does it make it weak? And therefore would indicate there's an imbalance, and then we can find respective protocols to support that nutritionally as well. So a couple of other symptoms I would say as well, because I got a bit of a bullet point list here that I'm just going to read out. So I just said, so how do you know if you have parasites? Well, here are some common signs, right? So I've already mentioned the gastrointestinal issues. Problems with your skin, like rashes, itchiness, hives, feeling anxious and not being able to explain why. But of course, that can be distinguished between anxiety and mental health differences versus just parasitic infection. Problems falling asleep at night and not being able to stay asleep when you do. Traveler's diarrhea after a recent international trip, or we always make the joke, the Delhi belly. Constant joint and muscle pain, feeling tired or fatigued even after a good night's sleep. Depression or lack of interest in things that used to excite you. Frequent yeast infections, itching, redness and discomfort around the anus or genitals, which I've explained earlier. Abnormal discharge from your genitals. You have an iron deficiency or anemia. Hunger that is like hard to satisfy, like insatiable, like you can eat everything and you just never feel full. It's a very interesting thing to observe. Lymph nodes that are swollen, stomach pain, stomach cramps, dehydration, weight loss, fever, upset stomach. Flu-like symptoms, aches and pains, itching, redness, irritation. Yeah. So yeah, like I said, if you want to test for parasites, at the clinic, like I said, we offer kinesiology testing, which instantly tells you if you have parasites or any gut health issues leading to gut dysbiosis. So things you'll experience would be leaky gut, SIBO, so small intestinal bacteria overgrowth, candida, H. pylori or Helicobacter pylori. Other information, so I'll just elaborate on that. So when I said a stool test, so what that entails is a sample of your stool would be looked at to determine if you have a parasite. So in other words, parasites and poop test. Endoscopy, so it's a procedure that analyzes the intestine through the insertion of a tube via the throat. A colonoscopy, so it's a procedure that also examines the intestines, but the tube is inserted through the rectum instead of the throat, and not actually put under, you just on a sort of like a partial local that you're somewhat still present with it, so it can be uncomfortable, and they blow a lot of gas in your intestines as well, so next few days you can feel a lot of discomfort. And blood tests as well, but unfortunately there isn't a one-size-fits-all blood test that you can take for every single parasite infection. So when getting a blood test done, you know, your doctor will only be able to order one for specific parasite infections that they think you might have. So for example, they'll probably run generic parasite tests, but then they'll be like, okay, you don't have this, you don't have parasites, but actually might not be the case, because again, from experience, there's just been a lot of people with a lot of unique rare parasites that they've never even heard of or seen before. So that, you know, sort of the Western blood testing is not really sufficient to support that. So a lot of people go private, but even still, doesn't really answer the questions that people are suffering with. So again, now we get to the point, like, so how do you get rid of parasites, right? So you get your results back, or you get confirmation from a colonic that you have a parasite. So what do you do now, right? So don't worry, there is always a solution at the clinic. So like I said, people go through a parasite cleansing protocol, which I usually say it's about 3 months, and sometimes people need to sort of repeat the protocol if they really do have a nasty parasite that's just not willing to give up or let go, or people don't stick to the protocol to the T. Like I said, it has to be accompanied by colonics, dietary changes, lifestyle changes. So just elaborating on the parasite cleansing protocols. So it's herbs. We use herbs to support the body getting rid of parasites, and it's done in two different ways. So one group of herbs that I will get you to take will help paralyze the organisms that are lurking in your gut, so allowing the body to remove it through the bowel, whereas the other group of herbs will work directly on destroying the organism. And can act beyond the gut itself as well. So the formulation that you will consume, you know, is designed for cleansing parasites from the gut, but also has the action against other things like yeasts and fungi, such as candida, such a very common thing that I see in colonics. And candida overgrowth often coexists with parasites in the gut, as they can both suppress gut immunity. So I always say to people when I see candida coming out in the colonics, I say, yeah, that's like that little demon that's like forcing you to have sugar cravings and sort of has a mind of its own. It can be quite nasty and really triggering, and really causes a lot of bloating and discomfort in a person's gut. So, you know, another thing I also observe is, like, if you have a sensitive gut, or, you know, often react to supplements, it's best to build the amounts gradually over a week to 10 days. So like I say, sometimes people are not strong enough to heal. So we have to really do more of a microdose of protocol and start to build. And this again can be done over an extended period of time. But the point is, as long as you stick to protocol regardless, you know, then we can achieve the healing and really get you back to the person who you once were. But yeah, like I said, for the best results, it's always best to combine the protocol with the colonic. And at the clinic, I have special formulation of herbs when I use in the colonic treatment that will destroy parasites as well. So we call it a parasite enema. And then also at my clinic, which I don't often see at other clinics, is then I do a probiotic implant as well, which I say is sort of used for like a 6-week duration of the program. And then we reassess where people are at. And as it always, you know, this will vary depending on the person and the condition and the type of parasite and the severity and how long they've had it for. So the most important I can say out of everything is always important to prevent constipation and ensure that you have a regular bowel movement when cleansing, because this is what your body is doing. It's getting rid of the parasites. So some experts recommend doing a few colonics to help improve gastrointestinal health. So typically they can, even other people, it's not even me, say, you know, you can do even 2 to 3 colon cleanses in a week. For 3 weeks, and you know, this can be done by doing a 2 to 4 week protocol cleanse. So again, I think 3 is quite a lot if you have the time and the finances, but at minimum you can definitely do one. But there's definitely, I can say there's lots of different cases. Some people come for 2 or 3, but you know, we assess you know, your energy levels, your finances, time realistically as well, because I think time is so tricky. But, you know, if you can throw everything you have at it, you can really achieve progress in a shorter period of time, right? So together, those two things, plus obviously having a practitioner at your side, coach, mentor to help you through your journey, and obviously getting the support of your friends and family and work colleagues around you as well is key. But this is what I can say is a super effective strategy for helping your body get rid of harmful organisms whilst at the same time nourishing yourself from the inside out. So dual thing. So I can definitely say over the years, I've, you know, worked with lots of different herbalists, herbal companies, supplement companies. And at the moment, I really have a favorite that I use. So when you come to the clinic, you'll learn all about them and what they do and how they look after and create their products. So it's really good. But together, we work with a three-phase program where, you know, the phase one, like I say, it's just working on cleaning and detoxifying your liver pathways, because you need to have your liver clean to really process this or support the elimination of the parasites. So it needs to be strong and in working order. Then we go in phase two of straight on parasite elimination. And then once that's done, and again, we'll confirm if that has to be re-performed or not, like if you have to redo protocol for different reasons. And then after that, when we can safely say, okay, we've eliminated the parasites, we go into the immune strengthening and regeneration of your intestinal flora, so literally rebuilding your gut to make it impossible for, I guess, to be a breeding ground or any uninvited guests to come squat in your home, right? But again, needing to be mindful, taking time to relax and look after yourself, and just, you know, a big time of self-care and self-love. So yeah, I work with all these different supplements and, you know, again, with years of experience, picking up some good ideas, lifestyle changes, and everyone, depending on their consultation, will have different needs of changes or shifts to do. There's lots of different other therapies that are complementary as well, but that will be subject to the individual. And then doing lots of detoxes, which you can do at home that supports liver, like castor oil packs, doing dietary changes like fasting or doing sauna or lymphatic drainage massage or Epsom salt baths, or like even doing breath work and deep breathing and working on mental health as well, because then you can start doing shifts in your mind, your body, your soul, and changing your frequency vibration. That can support or even prevent a healing crisis, but can support your progress a lot faster. So yes, I know it's a long podcast, but I think it's a worthwhile one and one you can just sort of listen a bit at a time, because it's a very deep subject. But, you know, now if we're tapping into sort of the emotional section, or, you know, when I talk about the emotional release during the detox that can go on, you know, there's, and in terms of parasite cleanses, I would say this is the common time where the healing crisis comes up or the Herxheimer's reaction comes up that people speak about. And you're like, oh, what is that, Star? Tell me some more, you know? And it's just basically your emotions are directly connected to the organs in your body. So like the liver is the main organ for your detoxification, and it is associated with emotions, and this is according to Chinese medicine, with anger or irritability, resentment and rage. So when you, and this is using an example now, like when you go through a big cleanse and you clear away a lot of toxic debris in your body, you know, this will create, will be taxing on your liver. So it can make you feel a lot more emotions, you know, that you've been holding on to or and unable to express. And then this can show up because it's a sign that, you know, these blockages are leaving the body. So yeah, you can sort of just sort of experience that and go through that. So I always say to people, think of it as an opposite logic house. When you're feeling negative and you're going through that, Yes, it's not nice, but it's a good sign because now that's, you know, deep innate stuff that was like residing within you that doesn't deserve to be inside you. You know, it's not healthy to keep holding on to it, and that, you know, in some essences were making you sick as well. So I always say to people, you know, like, what are some strategies, you know, for dealing with the emotional roller coaster? And one is learning from your emotions. You know, never resist your emotions, or even like, don't, you know, if you need to go to the bathroom as well, always go. Because whatever you resist persists, right? So, you know, each emotion has a positive intention and a message attached to it. So, you know, it wants to be heard or felt or addressed and released. So when we fear anger, when we feel anger, you know, when our values or boundaries and agreements have been violated, once we openly communicate those without any expectations of others to read our mind, the emotion goes away. You know, sadness can arise when we perceive we have lost something or feel that something is missing. So the outlet for that would be to cry. And then crying can actually provide a soothing release of stored sadness and grief, you know. Again, harping on about being able to prepare for the detox process, really getting your affairs in order, because, you know, it's vital you prepare for detox, because both, you know, like, not only physically but emotionally as well. So this means ensuring all your routes of eliminating are functioning well. So like your liver, you need to book out extra time just to relax and chill. Again, colonic will just really fast track your process of eliminating toxins that could potentially get stored in your body if you're not exercising well, etc. Need to do light exercise as well, because people with parasitic infection don't really have a lot of energy, so they can't really do a lot, but just some form of movement, even yoga, so you can sort of shift and contort the body. Yes, and most important is to try and support your sleeping space as much as possible. Because the more you can sleep, the more you give your body time to repair. So I think that's really good. Another thing that's quite interesting is just, you know, encouraging the observation of your emotions. So instead of identifying with your emotions and attaching meanings or judgments to them by saying, you know, I'm just an angry person, or, you know, maybe you could think about rephrasing, watching your power of language and saying, I am with anger, not I am anger, I am with this emotion at the moment. So it can sort of encourage on a psychological level, or by enabling you to disassociate from the emotion, and almost seeing it from another perspective. And then that encourages or provides an opportunity that you can let go. Because if you're saying, I am this, you're saying, this is a part of me, this is attached to me, this is what I identify with, and therefore it should stay. But of course, if you're saying, let go, let go, let go, I have got this thing attached with me, or I'm with it at the moment, but I no longer wish to be with it. And this also comes from when I worked with a hypnotherapist when I was a child. What did he say? Just for example, I mean, this was a good one because that stuck with me, is when, you know, people feel overweight and, you know, they say, I want to lose weight. And he said to me, why would you want to lose weight? You know, using the word lose implies loss. Loss implies something you want to come back, like, oh, I've lost my parent. Okay, therefore you wish for them to come back. So they're saying on a subconscious level, you're trying to manifest back your lost thing. So therefore you're going to lose weight, but then you'll find it again. He's like, let's use more powerful language. I want to get rid of weight, you know, because get rid of doesn't imply that you want it back. So it's the same thing with, you know, association with these emotions. Not I am an angry person. You know, I am impatient. I am this, I am that. No. I am with this emotion, but I no longer want to be with them. Right? So hopefully that helps, you know. So next one is all about getting out of your head and into your body, right? So I can say almost everyone is very mentally orientated and not very grounded just due to the way life is at the moment. You know, we're so busy on tech, so busy at work, the globalization with technology, everyone is literally in instant contact. So it's not giving us a time to disconnect and go outside as much as we would like to and as much as we should. And then we start to overthink everything because everywhere now is just a firing line of where you can be subject to something, you know, bad comment, bad judgment, self-criticizing, self-harm, self-judgment. And that just makes everything complicated and you can become an over-analyst and become extremely emotional. So our emotions then hijack our brains, and it's true. So that means we can't even process our thoughts clearly. So then we make incorrect decisions. So this is where I learned from breath work is really powerful. Deep abdominal breathing helps us reconnect to our bodies and makes us feel centered and better and able to process emotions. So I really, really encourage doing like different types of relaxation, but transformational therapies as well. And I can definitely say breath work is on the top of that list. Just reconnecting with your body. When we move to the next section about dietary changes, you know, what do I eat? What do I need to eat or remove, you know, to get rid of or eliminate parasites, you know? And I always say to get rid of a parasitic overgrowth, we need to detoxify our system. And that means following a parasite cleanse. And I also have a nice little, let's call it a PDF menu of suggested good parasitic elimination foods that are actually delicious as well and also vegan friendly, so that can support, you know, the wide range of people. But this involves first and foremost taking the supplements and protocols, so the antiparasitic herbs, and then of course the diet is the next most important. But the difficult thing I can say is in reality, there is no universal diet for everyone. So because the diet will vary because of age, lifestyle, environment, allergies, genetic history, so many factors. So, you know, everyone's a unique vehicle. So what I'm about to say is not necessarily for everyone, but it's quite a generic list to support parasite elimination. So just sort of take it with a pinch of salt. And this is where, okay, this podcast alone is not going to support you to go through your own detox. You'll need to work with a qualified practitioner. In summary, we're trying to starve the parasites. We're trying to create a die-off process. So this is, I'm very controversial about fasting, you know, and I'll make a podcast about that sometime. But this is when I'll say fasting is essential. And it's very important during this phase because if you're not feeding yourself, therefore you're not feeding your friends. Maybe not friends, but you know what I mean? These squatters. So always say to people, this is a time where you shouldn't be snacking and you will 100% hands down, hand over my chest, you're going to definitely feel like it every few minutes because they're basically all wanting to eat. And this is where I sort of put a strict rule in about keeping at least 3.5 hours between meals and trying not to snack. And again, also because if you're focusing on digestion, you're not going to be focused on repairing and elimination. So we just want to really allocate that little bit of energy that you have towards the right purpose, right? Raw foods out the window. So try only eat cooked foods. And then sort of a couple of items I would say that are good to incorporate into your diet that support good effective detoxification, elimination, are as follows. So a good one is pumpkin seeds, almonds, beetroots, carrots, kelp, coconut oil, papaya, and including eating their seeds, but only have a teaspoon a day. It's one of two choices. You can eat the seeds, but it's very peppery and it's not the nicest of taste, or you can swallow and then your stomach acid could then break them down. Cabbage, garlic, leeks, onion, radish, fennel, ginger, cinnamon, sage, oregano, thyme, pineapple, aloe vera, raw turmeric, pomegranate seeds, cloves, grapefruit, anise, dates, dandelion greens, lettuce, broccoli, kale, apple cider vinegar, cayenne pepper. Like, for example, you say garlic and onions. So, you know, these are very good for immune boosting. They have anti-parasitic effects as well due to the sulfur compounds. And in this essence, they can destroy pathogenic organisms. So really good support and something I encourage to eat daily. You know, when we're looking at some of the herbs I've mentioned, so oregano and ginger, again, antibacterial and antiparasitic effects, because they increase the production of your stomach acid, which can kill parasites and prevent infections. Because again, we also need to be considering the immune system has probably been wiped out by the parasites. Pineapple and papaya. So generally speaking, you avoid all sugars, and that will be including fructose. But papaya, pineapple, and dates are the only things that I say are good to go. Because they contain compounds that will decrease production of pro-inflammatory cytokines, which is basically what results in colon inflammation. So if you do this, either eating the fruit or maybe having it as a juice, it also has antiparasitic effects, so it's really good. Same for coconut oil. Trying to eat foods that are probiotic rich. So again, if you don't have a dairy intolerance or allergy, you can think of things like kefir, sauerkraut, yogurt, and keep parasites in check, essentially, because you'll be working on improving your gut health. Apple cider vinegar. So some people do a teaspoon in their water in the morning. And this is just really good to restore healthy pH balance. It can really improve digestion. And then generally speaking, other fruits and vegetables, you know, just helping, you know, they provide a rich source of, what can I say, proactive compounds that will nourish your gut, that will provide fiber so that it will encourage you to have your regular bowel movements. So if you are going through the die-off procedure, then at least your colon then can be supported by elimination and not anything getting stuck, and then can basically reabsorb or can host in a different part of your body. And of course, and I mean, this should go without saying that, you know, number one is you need to be drinking water, either bottled, filtered, not tap water. But strict things to definitely avoid. We're going to look at raw food, caffeine, alcohol, wheat, many grains, you know, because essentially, especially the ones containing gluten, they will basically break down into sugar, and then that can quickly and easily cause intestinal inflammation. And again, sugary means feeding your parasites. Wanting to avoid legumes, grains, pork, simple carbohydrates, dairy, dairy products other than the ones that are good for probiotic purposes, all sugars, and I say except honey and dates, because usually, you know, feeds the harmful organisms, yeast as well, fruits and processed foods. So when I say avoid sugars, you need to also avoid anything that says with added sugar as well, because a lot of people don't really notice that on labels. So read your labels. I'm always harping on about that as well. Yeah, but like I say, just try and really truly keep your sugar intake to a minimum. It's going to be hard. But like anything, it's a process of adjustment. And, you know, some common examples of things with added sugar that maybe is important to point out, but sugar, soda would be one. So soft drinks, energy drinks, sports drinks, sauces, big culprit, condiments, major, salad dressings, fruit juices. So, you know, when I say juices, I don't just mean strictly fruit juice. I'm talking about a vegetable juice, teas, cereals, bread, candy, desserts, syrups, you know, different toppings, and packaged and processed foods as well. Just for example, like soups will have added sugar and you wouldn't think that, or gravies or something like that. Things that would in essence seem savory in nature, most likely laced with sugar, because the sugar is addictive to an individual. So a lot of food retailers will put things with sugar to sweeten it and create addictive behavior, because then you'll go, I really want to go buy that again because I really loved it, you know. And then I go back on to saying, you know, make sure you're increasing your fiber, because that is just going to support your elimination. You know, and what is fiber? You know, fiber is just foods that are grainy and fibrous in nature that can help support. You don't actually break it down fully, so it will pass through the intestines and then basically act like a mop that will just clean up and bind your feces together that can support elimination, so, and make ensuring regular bowel movements. So in summary, fiber provides lubrication of the colon, which is required to function properly, as it helps support natural and smooth elimination. So fiber will fall into two categories, both soluble and insoluble. So soluble meaning serving many functions, which includes conducive environment for friendly bacteria, so slowing the absorption rate of sugars, lowering serum cholesterol levels, and binding to heavy metals dumped by your bloodstream into the colon. And examples of this would be like apples, prunes, figs, raspberries, carrots, oat bran, kidney beans, lima beans, psyllium husk, which is quite a common one. Whereas you get insoluble fiber, which will then complement the soluble fiber by increasing the bulk in the waist, so preventing impacted bowel pockets or diverticula. So then this will help, you know, keep people who've got gut health issues like diverticulitis, colitis, ulcerative colitis, that kind of thing, just really helps move things along by reducing the length of time that waste stays in the body and absorbing bile acid released during digestion. So examples would be rice, quinoa, millet, whole wheat, raw spinach, Brussels sprouts, and flax seeds, but obviously being mindful if you have an allergy or an intolerance to them. So that's why I recommend the blood tests. Other foods I'd say that are naturally high in fiber, which you can commonly get in the shops, will be chia seeds. So chia seed pudding is quite nice. Chickpeas, figs, prunes, psyllium husk, beans, broccoli, berries, lentils, avocado, whole grains, carrots, brown rice, cereal, oatmeal, pears, bananas, beets, artichokes, Brussels sprouts, quinoa, popcorn, which I find to be quite good, but not butter-based, just salted, sweet potatoes, because the colon also needs sodium in order to be functional. Like I say to people as well, with the veg, ensure eating low starch. And examples of things that are high in starch would be white potatoes, yams, sweet potatoes, corn, peas, and beans. But like, you don't have to completely remove it, but just being more mindful that you want to give more favor towards mostly green vegetables, because green is the color that supports liver, right? So examples would be like spinach, kale, dandelion greens, broccoli, tomatoes, zucchini, cucumber, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, that kind of thing. If you can, ideally buy organic and cook them with really good oils, because bad oils can make any healthy meal into an inflammatory nightmare, which you'll get from a previous podcast I made about oils. So I said sugar is out the window, which includes fructose, aka fruits. So then it's like, okay, what for sure is definitely off limits, and that would be bananas, mangoes, cantaloupe, grapes, figs, that kind of thing. Fruits that you can incorporate into your diet would be lemons, lime, coconut, pineapple, papaya, papaya seeds, pomegranate, avocados. Things you can sort of introduce throughout your protocol or be had in moderation would be blueberries, raspberries, good for antioxidants, strawberries, blackberries, cherries, apples, dates. Another tip is that if you're planning to eat one of these fruits, just to make sure you eat them before you eat protein, because due to the nature of a protein, it takes a lot of time to digest, so which can then make it a lot more difficult to digest what you've eaten, or what you eat after the protein. So just for example, when you're in a fasted state, this would be a good time to eat your simple sugars, like the fruits I've just mentioned, in moderation. Next is you need to include prebiotic foods in your diet. So we're going to think we're going to think oats, garlic, onions, leeks, dandelion, asparagus, very good, but makes your pee smell bad. Chicory root, artichoke, barley, flax seeds, burdock, cacao. And then, of course, you can get supplements as well. But this is just more of a natural way to do it. So what are prebiotics, you know? Basically, prebiotic foods are indigestible carbs that can feed beneficial bacteria in your gastrointestinal tract. Yeah, it's basically, in summary, really, really good for your gut health. However, some contain sugar, but what I've just listed above, you know, they're quite low in sugar, so it's good. But definitely recommended to have a lot of vegetables cooked that will support the fiber, and supports fiber to support elimination as well as support gut health. Same will then extend to, you need to incorporate probiotics as well. So most people, I just get to take supplements, but then also try incorporate foods where you can. And what are probiotics? Probiotics are, what I always say is, it's beneficial bacteria that will support reharmonizing or creating a healthy balance in your gut microbiome. Because of course, if you have a healthy gut, then everything will become an environment that's impossible for parasites or any bad organisms to grow. It supports your immune system in numerous ways as well. So yes, but also just being mindful what kind of probiotics you will take, is you need to have a good brand, like a good recovery one, because there's lots of different strains within the different probiotics you buy, right? But in terms of foods, and again, I'll keep saying, be mindful of your allergies and intolerances, but it would be yogurt, kimchi, sauerkraut, kombucha, kefir, pickles, miso, olives, and good apple cider vinegar as well. So just sort of what you're trying to get is the live cultures from the foods. I always try say to avoid gluten, because it's basically going to turn into sugar and the body holds onto it. It's not good for people, especially those who have celiac disease, who have allergies to it. Just generally, gluten seems to be a bad guy, which I can see destroys and wreaks havoc on guts, that I've seen throughout my years in the clinic. Yeah, and it's just a major one that's, you know, a pro-inflammatory marker. So yeah, it's just not really, really good. So definitely say to cut back on that, cut back on alcohol. I mean, I can elaborate on that, but in summary, will cause gut inflammation, havoc on the liver, dehydrates you. So it's just not aiding and being pro-healing. Yeah, and then sort of the things you want to get is, you need to get your key vitamins and nutrients in. So again, you either come for a drip, you come for I don't know, vitamin shots, or you do supplements, that kind of thing. But, or, you know, you'd want to get a multivitamin spectrum. Anything that I can say for sure And shots, I would say, like thinking B12 for energy, or B complex, or vitamin D as well, that can support the gut. But just a good FYI to avoid vitamin C, because parasites, I've learned, love vitamin C, so, and as well, not good for cancer. So if you have parasites, then I say, you know, don't take any vitamin C supplement. But other things you want, I'll just start again, is like vitamin A, you want your B vitamins, you want your B12, you want your vitamin D, you want your vitamin E, and D is always linked with K as well, so good for blood. You want to boost your immune system with zinc, selenium, which is a good anti-inflammatory supplement as well. Yeah, so I think those are the main key ones. Yeah, so that I think we'll be covering in terms of the focus on nutrition. Again, reiterating about your water. You know, just make sure you're drinking clean water that's been filtered or bottled. Lots of other supplements when you come for protocol that I recommend as a daily like staple, where magnesium would be part of it as well. Just make sure if you're engaging in fasting that you're doing in a controlled, you understand fasting well, so you can identify the triggers when you see your blood sugar dropping, so we can ensure that then you don't peak and then you drop and then you resort to eating sugar because your blood sugar has been messed with. Obviously focusing on digesting, so that would be good to incorporate digestive enzymes as well. Need to be mindful about overeating, because you know, you can then spend all your time digesting and then not processing, and it can be much harder on your body. So I think that was a lot to digest. I think this is a podcast that is for sure some, you'll have to listen in parts, you'll have to listen to it again, but it is an area that, you know, yes, I can be lighthearted and comical and, you know, gentle and sweet, but this is a subject that requires a lot of discipline, a lot of effort, a lot of seriousness and a lot of commitment, because I can see and I have seen what parasites can do to people and almost destroy people. So it's not a subject to be taken lightly. And the unfortunate nature is that this is a lot more common that I wanted to be, just due to a lack of understanding and awareness of how to avoid things, you know, to be mindful of things as well. So, yes. So if you have any comments, notes, or anything you want to share, or even your own story about parasites and how you've overcome it, I would love to know, because I think this is a community in itself. If you suspect you might have had some of these symptoms that I'm talking about, or, you know, you've had some unresolved health issues for some time that the doctors can't seem to help, then it might be worth paying me a visit at my clinic, which is based in London, in central London, Monument. And we can start really isolating and doing a process of elimination to seeing what is triggering you and making you unwell. Great. So I'm thinking and I'm sending a lot of energy to you, because I know this is quite an intense one. It's almost like a lecture. But I'm wishing you well wherever you are in the world. And I'm looking forward to dropping the next podcast. Bye.